So continuing the readings with around Dhammanupassana and continue with the hindrances section, first section, and this next sutta, just a short one. But it just pointing to the just nature of the hindrances and the nature of an enlightened being, and seeing a difference between the ones who are seka trainees and still in training, still not enlightened, that one they need to deal with the hindrances, whereas, an arahant is one who has completely eliminated them. This is Sunyutta 54, Sutta number 12. On one occasion, the Venerable Lomasa Wangisa was dwelling among the Sakyans at Kapilavatu in Nigrodha's park. Then Mahanama, the Sakyan, approached the Venerable Lomasa Wangisa, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Is it the case, Venerable Sir, that the dwelling of a trainee is itself the same as the Tathagata's dwelling, or is it rather that the dwelling of a trainee is one thing and the Tathagata's dwelling is another?" And trainee is the translation for seka, and that's usually including the Sotapanna Sakadagami, Anagami, seka. "It is not the case, friend Mahanama, that the dwelling of a trainee is itself the same as the Tathagata's dwelling. Rather, the dwelling of a trainee is one thing and the Tathagata's dwelling is another. Friend Mahanama, those bhikkhus who are trainees, who have not attained their mind's ideal, who dwell aspiring for the unsurpassed security from bondage, dwell having abandoned the five hindrances." What five? The hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. Those bhikkhus who are trainees dwell having abandoned these five hindrances. But, friend Mahanama, for those bhikkhus who are arahants, whose taints are destroyed, who have lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached their own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence, become completely liberated through final knowledge, the five hindrances have been abandoned, cut off at the root, made like palm stumps, obliterated, so that they are no more subject to future arising. What five? The hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. For those bhikkhus who are arahants, these five hindrances have been abandoned, cut off at the root, made like palm stumps, obliterated so that they are no more subject to future arising. By the following method too, friend Mahanama, it can be understood how the dwelling of a trainee is one thing and the Tathagata's dwelling is another. On this occasion, friend Mahanama, the Blessed One who is dwelling at Ichin. Oh, this is another part that talking about the Buddha's being dwelling in mindfulness of breathing as his abiding place. This is during the time that this, because this section is the Anapanasutta. Anapanasamyutta, and it's referring back to a sutta where the Buddha does 3 months of seclusion, and then he's asked what his abiding place is, his dwelling, and he dwells in mindfulness of breathing. So this next sutta is from Anguttara 4, Sutta number 61. And I found this one interesting as a in Sutta, in its say its application of the five hindrances to the relationship with the world, and also that it speaks to the say wealth, the skillful use of wealth, while also kind of recognizing the kind of the natural hopes of most people in the world. Then the householder Anatha Bindika approached the Blessed One. The Blessed One said to him, "Householder, there are these four things that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and rarely gained in the world. What for? One thinks, may wealth come to me righteously. This is the first thing in the world that is wished for, and rarely gained in the world. Two, having gained wealth righteously, one thinks, may fame come to me and to my relatives and preceptors. This is the second thing rarely gained in the world. Three, having gained wealth righteously and having gained fame for oneself and for one's relatives and preceptors, one thinks, may I live long and enjoy a long lifespan. This is the third thing rarely gained in the world. Four, having gained wealth righteously, having gained fame for oneself and for one's relatives and preceptors, living long and enjoying a long lifespan, one thinks, with the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn in a good destination in a heavenly world. This is the fourth thing that is then wished for, desired, agreeable, and rarely gained in the world. There are, householder, four other things that lead to obtaining these four things. What for? Accomplishment in faith, accomplishment in virtuous behavior, accomplishment in generosity, and accomplishment in wisdom. One, and what, householder, is accomplishment in faith? Here, a noble disciple is endowed with faith, places faith in the enlightenment of the Tathagata thus. The Blessed One is an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the worlds, unsurpassed trainer of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. This is called accomplishment in faith. Two, and what is accomplishment in virtuous behavior? Here, a noble disciple abstains from the destruction of life, abstains from taking what is not given, abstains from sexual misconduct, abstains from wrong speech, and abstains from liquor, wine, and intoxicants, the basis for heedlessness. This is called accomplishment in virtuous behavior. Three, and what is accomplishment in generosity? Here, a noble disciple dwells at home with a mind free from the stain of miserliness, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. This is called accomplishment in generosity. And what is accomplishment in wisdom? If one dwells with a heart overcome by longing and unrighteous greed, one does what should be avoided and neglects one's duty, so that one's fame and happiness are spoiled. If one dwells with a heart overcome by ill will, by dullness and drowsiness, by restlessness and remorse, by doubt, one does what should be avoided and neglects one's duty, so that one's fame and happiness are spoiled. When, householder, a noble disciple has understood thus, longing and unrighteous greed are a defilement of the mind, he abandons them. When he has understood thus, ill will is a defilement of the mind, he abandons it. When he has understood thus, dullness and drowsiness are a defilement of the mind, he abandons them. When he has understood thus, restlessness and remorse are a defilement of the mind, he abandons them. When he has understood thus, doubt is a defilement of the mind, he abandons it. When, householder, a noble disciple has understood thus, longing and unrighteous greed are a defilement of the mind and has abandoned them. When he has understood thus, ill will, dullness and drowsiness, restlessness and remorse, doubt, is a defilement of the mind and has abandoned it, he is then called a noble disciple of great wisdom, of wide wisdom, one who sees the range, one accomplished in wisdom. This is called accomplishment in wisdom. These are the four other things that lead to obtaining the four things that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and rarely gained in the world. With wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth, righteously gained, the noble disciple undertakes four worthy deeds. What for? Here, householder, with wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, the noble disciple makes himself happy and pleased and properly maintains himself in happiness. He makes his parents happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. He makes his wife and children, his slaves, his workers and servants happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. He makes his friends and companions happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. This is the first case of wealth that has gone to good use, that has been properly utilized and used for a worthy cause. Again, with wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, the noble disciple makes provisions against the losses that might arise from fire, floods, kings, thieves, or displeasing heirs. He makes himself secure against them. This is the second case of wealth that has gone to good use for a worthy cause. Again, with wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, the noble disciple makes five oblations to relatives, guests, ancestors, the king, and the deities. This is the third case of wealth that has gone to good use for worthy cause. Again, with wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, the noble disciple establishes an uplifting offering of alms, an offering that is heavenly, resulting in happiness, conducive to heaven. To those ascetics and Brahmins who refrain from intoxication and heedlessness, who are settled in patience and mildness, who tame themselves, calm themselves, and train themselves for Nibbana. This is the fourth case of wealth that has gone to good use, that has been properly employed and used for a worthy cause. These, householder, are the four worthy deeds that the noble disciple undertakes with wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth, righteously gained. When anyone exhausts wealth on anything apart from these four worthy deeds, that wealth is said to have gone to waste, to have been squandered, to have been used frivolously. But when anyone exhausts wealth on these four worthy deeds, that wealth is said to have gone to good use, to have been properly used, to have been utilized for a worthy cause. And it finishes the sutta with the verses. I've enjoyed wealth, supported my dependents, and overcome adversities. I have given an uplifting offering and performed the five oblations. I have served the virtuous monastics, the self-controlled celibate ones. I have achieved whatever purpose a wise person dwelling at home might have in desiring wealth. What I have done brings me no regret. Recollecting this, a mortal remains firm in the noble Dhamma. They praise him here in this life, and after death he rejoices in heaven. Make a nice sutta of the Buddha giving advice to people living in the world. Any questions on either of those suttas?
Regarding the first sutta, I'm kind of curious about what's the difference between sleep and
sleep? I think that the sloth and torpor is when the mind is, one is basically when you're rested and then should be alert and awake, but then the mind drifts into that dullness and drowsiness. That's Bhikkhu Bodhi has started to change the translation from sloth and torpor to, which is a bit obscure, and dullness and drowsiness as being typifying the mental state. So that, yeah, there's a, yeah, one is physically rested, but the mind drifts into kind of dullness and drowsiness too, as a means of just avoiding either the necessity of applying effort or the mind going to kind of annihilation of feeling, or just the lack of ability to say arouse and sustain mindfulness. The mind drifts to that dullness and drowsiness. So it's not really about being not having had enough sleep and then becoming drowsy. But also the relationship to sleep is also a part of that training of Chahakarliyana Yoga is that that devotion to wakefulness, so that necessity of or the feeling of necessity of a lot of sleep is not really it's not really required. The body tends to not require as much sleep as one assumes, but it's with that devotion to wakefulness that uplifts the mind and keeps it bright and tends to just negate because I was, what was it, the one Prat night talking about my first meditation retreat, and that was I'd never done a meditation retreat, and then the instructions were right at the beginning, sleep 4 hours a night, and it just didn't even sink in as it just seems like some kind of fantasy. I didn't even register really in a sense. But I did notice my sleep dropping as I was meditating. But the idea of anything less than 8 or 9 hours a night was just inconceivable. And then after, I don't know, it was probably a couple of weeks, there was this kind of plateau that I was hitting at the time, and going to the teacher on a daily basis for short interviews, and then he asked, how much are you sleeping at night? I said, probably about 6 hours, which I thought was a really big deal, And then he just lit into me. What have you been doing? You've been wasting your time here. And he said right at the beginning, 4 hours a night, and you've been just stealing all this sleep. And go back, and no more than 2 hours a night. And we said 4 hours a night, you've been taking all this sleep and hoarding it, sort of thing. Just go back, 2 hours a night. I said, oh, okay. And then it was 2 hours was kind of tough. But after a couple of days of really trying, then I got into a rhythm of 4 hours a night. was so, oh yeah, this is really all that's needed. But if there's and that's once you start to just kind of recognize sometimes when there's maybe doing a lot of physical work or a lot of engagement, then there tends to be a bit more of a need for sleep. So sleep needs are more dependent on the body, but there is a certain baseline of, you know, bringing arousing, that kind of interest in wakefulness, but the dullness and drowsiness is the hindrance where the mind, its default option is to something is a bit it's like that's the sort of the escape from experience, the escape from the mind is through dullness and drowsiness. So that's the hindrance, and just being able to recognize the difference between the two, trying to gauge one's sleep needs, and it's really interesting. Like after I had that whatever it was that was diagnosed first as a stroke, since then, I've had to sleep on an average of probably an extra hour. I guess 4 hours is not quite enough anymore. It's weird, but it's more of an actual physical need.
Laziness.
Laziness has a different sort of, it would manifest in sloth and torpor, but it also manifests in other things as well. And I'm not actually sure, like when there are these translations of laziness, what that is in Pali. I don't think it's any.
Kusita.
Kusita. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because that you see that in those discourses as a virya, and then and see the translation as laziness. So it's a whole different word. But it would be. It would. You know, one of its, say, symptoms, or how it manifests, would probably be in that sloth and torpor.
In the first sutta, near the end, there's a phrase, he sees the range.
Right. Sees the range, right. Yeah, that's an interesting definition of wisdom. You see how the Buddha, defines wisdom in so many different ways. Sometimes it's seeing arising and ceasing. Sometimes it's seeing the nature of the five khandhas, and then in this is defining wisdom as the accomplished in wisdom as being able to free the mind from the five hindrances, and then so on. So that's it's called a noble disciple, great wisdom, wide wisdom, one who sees the range, one accomplished in wisdom. This is called accomplishment of wisdom, and then the footnote is It's one of these commentarial obfuscations, which is... This is the quote, is that he sees whatever comes into range, even a subtle matter that comes into range. So it, not hugely illuminating. Okay. This is a sutta that, you've heard the the simile, because I've used it fairly frequently, but again, to be able to see the whole context of the whole sutta, where the Buddha uses it, and then how he develops it or expands on it or applies it. This is the Anguttara 5, Sutta number 23. Bhikkhus, there are these five defilements of gold, defiled by which gold is not malleable, wieldy, and luminous, but brittle and not properly fit for work. What five? Iron, copper, tin, lead, and silver. These are the five defilements of gold, defiled by which gold is not malleable, wieldy, and luminous, but brittle and not properly fit for work. But when gold is freed from these five defilements, it is malleable, wieldy, and luminous, pliant, and properly fit for work. Then whatever kind of ornament one wishes to make from it, whether a bracelet, earrings, a necklace, or a gold garland, one can achieve one's purpose. So too, bhikkhus, there are these five defilements of the mind, defiled by which the mind is not malleable, wieldy, and luminous, but brittle, and not properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. What five? Sensual desire, ill will, dullness and drowsiness, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. These are the five defilements of the mind, defiled by which the mind is not malleable, wieldy, and luminous, but brittle, and not properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. But when the mind is freed from these five defilements, it becomes malleable, wieldy, and luminous, pliant, and properly concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Then, there being a suitable basis, one is capable of realizing any state realizable by direct knowledge toward which one might incline the mind, if one wishes. May I will the various kinds of psychic potency. Having been one, may I become many. Having been many, may I become one. May I appear and vanish. May I go unhindered through a wall, through a rampart, through a mountain as though through space. May I dive in and out of the earth as though it were water. May I walk on water without sinking as though it were earth. Seated cross-legged, may I travel in space like a bird. With my hand, may I touch and stroke the moon and sun so powerful and mighty. May I exercise mastery with the body as far as the Brahma world. One is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If one wishes, may I, with the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, hear both kinds of sounds, the divine and human, those that are far as well as near. One is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If one wishes, may I understand the minds of other beings and persons, having encompassed them with my own mind. May I understand a mind with lust as a mind with lust, and a mind without lust as a mind without lust. A mind with hatred as a mind with hatred, and a mind without hatred as a mind without hatred. A mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, and a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion. A contracted mind as contracted, and a distracted mind as distracted. An exalted mind as exalted, and an unexalted mind as unexalted. A surpassable mind as surpassable, and an unsurpassable mind as unsurpassable. A concentrated mind as concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated. A liberated mind as liberated, and an unliberated mind as unliberated. One is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If one wishes, may I recollect my manifold past abodes, That is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many aeons of world dissolution, many aeons of world evolution, many aeons of world dissolution and world evolution. Thus, there I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn elsewhere, and there too I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn here. May I thus recollect my manifold past abodes with their aspects and details. One is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If one wishes, may I, with a divine eye which is purified and surpasses the human, see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare in accordance with their karma thus. These beings who engaged in misconduct by body, speech, and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong view, and undertook karma based on wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. But these beings who engaged in good conduct by body, speech, and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right view and undertook karma based on right view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye which is purified and surpasses the human, may I see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare in accordance with their karma. One is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. If one wishes, may I, with the destruction of the taints, in this very life realize for myself with direct knowledge the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, and having entered upon it, may I dwell in it. One is capable of realizing it, there being a suitable basis. Any questions?
Just to clarify, in that sutta, he's declaring that the being a suitable basis is merely the temporary suppression of the.
The suitable basis is both the, say, the suppression of the, hindrances, but also there actually needs to be some specific training that takes place, and one has to also have a karmic propensity, some kind of karmic propensity and karmic affinity. For particular, because it's like Sariputta, of course, is a good example of that, where he's somebody who is, not only suppressing the hindrances, suppressing the defilements, incredible capability in terms of analysis of phenomena, but didn't really have any inclination and affinities for those kind of psychic potencies. And that famous story or sutta of the, where he's clobbered over the head by a yakka and Moggallana is telling him, and he said, here he is, he's got he's hit over the head with this by this yucca, and all he says is, "I've got a bit of headache today." and Sariputta sort of saying, "Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it marvelous? Here I've been clobbered over the head, and I have no idea what's been going on, and I can't see anything. I can't even see a little mud sprite, let alone a yucca." And Moggallana can see all these things. This is really incredible. Different propensities. It's a suitable basis. Yeah?
Is there any place in the canon where those suitable bases are different things enumerated? I just remember one about what the being recipient of the path for the Divine Eye.
I'm not sure if there was a footnote on that. I only have a vague recollection, so that those were the things that came to mind.
There's a place where the Buddha says that the recollection of past lives
depended on
memory. Depended on
memory. Right. It doesn't explain really, but there's all these different an actual. You see in the Visuddhimagga where the kind of actual training of the mind and it's incredibly rigorous. Incline in those, to develop the mind in those, with those capabilities. So that's a rigorous kind of a training that is cultivated. Although sometimes you see that, again, that's where the propensities also come in, where some people spontaneously have these. Some of these powers. Generally, that's what they say. Classically, that's what is said. But in my experience, I've seen people who've displayed certain powers, and I have my doubts to their proficiency in fourth jhana.